Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Peter Alperin, Vice President at Doximity. Welcome, Dr. Alperin.
Hi, nice to meet you, Matt.
So before I get going with the discussions with my guests, I always like to give each person the chance to give a little bit more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So Dr. Alperin, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Hi. So my name is Pete Alperin. I'm a vice president here at Doximity. And while I've worn a number of hats, I am primarily focused at this point on helping develop products that make clinicians more efficient. At Doximity, we're a professional network, a medical network for physicians, and so that's my primary focus. I also have a clinical practice, and I practice at the VA Medical Center here in San Francisco and have for over 20 years, and my overall healthcare IT experience is over 20 years as well.
So, and what kind of practicing physician are you?
I'm trained as an internal medicine physician, but I primarily focus my practice in the emergency room, although I do have also an internal medicine practice as well.
And what first interested you in becoming a physician?
That's a complicated question, but I guess the simple answer is that I've always really derived a tremendous amount of personal and professional satisfaction in helping people, in helping people think about and deal with issues that they have and try to be clear thinking in that, but also recognizing the incredible emotional and cultural importance that physicians play, the role that they play in our society. So it's really just been mostly about focusing on helping people.
So I have a feeling this is going to be a bit of a loaded question, but how do you feel the healthcare system functions with regard to being able to allow you to help people now?
Well, that certainly is a loaded question, but you don't have to make it loaded. I think, the system of healthcare that we have is always changing, right? And if you think about medicine 100 years ago, it was very much a small cottage industry. Physicians had their practices out of the backs of their houses, and there's still some of those doctors even to this day, although they're incredibly few. And then the way that healthcare evolved in this sort of as a cottage industry, perhaps made sense at the time, but now we're, a massive country. And I personally think that healthcare and the healthcare system exists to obviously help the sick and the needy when they are in that moment where they need help. But also that, our role as physicians is to help patients get better so that they can live happy and productive lives. So the system that we have today can at times be incredibly frustrating for physicians, certainly. But at the same time, it's still, I think, a profoundly satisfying way to spend your life's work. And it's a privilege to be a physician. So I guess in another thought is that a lot of the things that we do to help things make more efficient help you in one way, but then sort of open you up to other issues. So an example being the classic one being like an electronic health record. The intent has been tremendous, and I think that it's helped people practice better medicine, certainly in terms of being able to have that information at their fingertips. But of course, it's come at a very huge cost, which is the ability of physicians to spend that quality time connecting with their patients, which we all know is essential if you want to help patients get better. And EMRs have been profoundly disappointing in that realm. So, yeah, I guess in a lot of ways, every improvement comes with its own set of new challenges.
No, I think that's a very apt description, because it's and kind of the other piece that you were mentioning there is the fact that if you make one change, you have all these other consequences that maybe you hadn't been focusing on. And that seems to be one of the more common descriptions of why it is so challenging to try and address any of the perceived issues within the healthcare system.
Yeah, healthcare is really complicated, right? I mean, if you think about it, it requires a tremendous number of people to produce the service. It is something that where every single, widget or product, which I absolutely don't like, I'm not implying in any way that patients are that way, but every patient is customized, right? It's very difficult to make elements of this as cookie cutter as you can, as if you're producing a can of tuna or something like that. So I think that there's an inherent level, or there's an inherent sort of floor in how much you can mass produce healthcare before people really start to not appreciate the care that you're giving, because it's not just about giving people the right antibiotic or the right blood pressure medication. It's really being able to connect with them so that they're then willing to share some of those things that they may not be willing to share with others, so that you can find out what the real root cause of their illness or their issue is.
Your description there of focusing in on the individual and appreciating the differences between each person really seems to be honing in on where a lot of the evolution and reform in healthcare is trying to drive things. You know, I think that seems like it ties into value-based care and the discussions around personalized medicine. So kind of what do you see as some of the evolution that is helping to enhance that personalization?
I guess I might reframe the question a little bit, in the sense that I think a lot of the things that are happening now are both a combination of personalization, but also, you know, more almost mass customization, in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of things like personalized medicine are definitely have a lot of promise, but that's a little bit different than paying personal attention to your patient. And so, like in the world of oncology, cancers are not just lung cancers or lymphomas. They have, all have genetic signatures, which then will dictate the type of care that you give. So that's been an incredibly successful area where, quote, personalized medicine has helped. And there's obviously a lot of opportunity in other diseases. In terms of the personal care and connection with patients, though, you know, that's, patients still don't want to go to the computer for their medical care. They want to go to a person. They want someone who they can see and who they feel is listening to them. And unless you have people who can do that, you're not going to elicit a lot of the information from a patient that is essential to their care. And so what I mean by that is that patients will only be completely frank and honest with physicians or caregivers that they trust. And building that trust just takes time. And that's what I think is when I was talking about personalizing that level of care. That's a little bit more what I was referring to, but your point is also very well taken.
No, but I think you're very good to help make sure that the discussion is framed in the right direction, because it's, you know, to kind of bring a couple of the points together, you know, talking about the benefit that some of these newer tools can bring, but also, you know, you already said the challenges that can arise, you know, with the class example of the EMR. It feels like a significant number of the complaints there are that those things are actually getting in the way of and impeding the ability to have that personal person-to-person interaction, which, you know, as you're suggesting, and I think is a great point, is that that is where so much of the value lies. And that's really, you know, I think I'm hoping that's a fair thing to say, that that the both the physicians and other clinicians and the patient, that's what they want. They want that face-to-face, person-to-person discussion. And as you said, they don't want a machine getting in the way.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I think what's true is I think patients want both. And I think they deserve both, that's not something that is necessarily going to be free, and that it's expensive. And I think society has to have a conversation about how much we're willing to spend and what those trade-offs are. If you spend money here, you can't spend money there. Or really it's about resources. You know, one of the sort of overlooked things that I think is really important is that it's certainly not overlooked anymore, is it has become harder as a physician to be able to spend the time with patients and feel like you have the time to really, you know, deliver the care that you want, that you want to give, that we all went to medical school to deliver, and that patients are really longing for and seeking. And so, you know, Doximity, one of the things we've tried to do is to give physicians an opportunity to have conversations with their colleagues and their peers, because there's a huge value for that, you know, that water cooler, if you will, and with physicians being as time crunched as they are, and, you know, increasingly siloed within specialties, providing that forum and that community for physicians is sort of really one of the main things that, it's certainly the main thing that's driven me to want to work here at Doximity and at companies like us.
No, and I kind of like what you just said about you know, creating platforms and opportunities for discussions, because I think you're right. It's very easy to have silos be created, whether it's, you know, silos within a profession of, you know, people with the same background or between different pieces. So kind of thinking about how to bridge those, I don't know if gaps is the right word, but bridge those, you know, missed opportunities for communication. What do you see as some of the paths that we need to go down to help remove some of those silos?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think, you know, one of the things that I was involved with early in my career, is another one of those classic things that brought benefit on one side, not on the other, which was I was a hospitalist, you know, an inpatient physician. Very early in my career, in the late 90s, when the movement was really very nascent, I had to explain what I did. Now, of course, hospitalists are everywhere, and they have definitely statistically really led to better care in terms of fewer medical errors and patients having, you know, physicians who are constantly there and getting their tests handled more quickly. But that came at the sacrifice of primary care doctors in the community really losing touch with their hospitals and really increasingly silo them. So now they were not just, you know, family practitioners or internists, they were outpatient physicians and outpatient family practitioners and outpatient internal medicine physicians. And it's happening all across specialties. And so it's another one of those examples where an improvement leads to, you know, another set of problems. In terms of how that, and that's been particular around siloing, I would say that the things we need to do are to give physicians a forum to be able to communicate with their peers. I think in a lot of ways, it's also, I'm seeing in my own personal experience, increased interest or renewed interest, I should say, in the doctor's lounge at hospitals to bring up physicians together who got, you know, hey, Joe, I haven't seen you for 5 years or those sorts of things, so that people can create that sense of community. Because it goes down to familiarity and trust. And that's where I think we need to work. And again, that's like, I don't want to bang the same drum, but that's kind of what we've done here at Doximity to the extent that we can.
And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Peter Alpern from Doximity. We've been kind of talking about a bunch of the issues facing the healthcare industry and the practice of medicine and provision of services so far. And, you know, kind of picking up on what you're just describing in terms of creating forums and other opportunities for interaction, you know, are those places going to be created by outside forces, by the physicians, or probably more likely some combination of different groups?
You know, I think that it requires, you know, healthcare has evolved, and there's definitely a tremendous need for, you know, the blending of skill sets. And so certainly at Doximity, there's many more technologists than there are doctors. And I think in all these organizations now, they're recognizing the need for people who are savvy in having a number of different skill sets that go beyond just the provision of care, you know, which is still obviously part and parcel and most important in terms of becoming, of being a physician and other, you know, the other health professions as well. So I do think it requires a good number of people to bring different varying skills and perspectives together.
Yeah, and kind of picking up on what you're just talking about in terms of blending of skill sets, I kind of want to take that in a slightly different and in a little bit unrelated direction to what we've been talking about so far, and get your perspectives in terms of the blending of, you know, I guess I'll call it traditional or physical medicine and mental health, and kind of see or try to get an understanding from you in terms of how the blending of those skill sets is changing and how integration of those two types of care to really create a more holistic set of provision of care is kind of developing.
Yeah, no. So that's a good thing to sort of dig into. So, you know, Probably the primary care doctors, I'm not going to go on record to say they deliver all of the primary mental health care in this country, but they sure deliver a lot of it, because the primary care physician is still the person that most patients will initially present to. And I think the idea that physical and mental health are inextricably linked is, I think, absolutely an answered question. They 100% are. And I think that a lot of what we treat for and have medicalized is, at least physically medicalized, is really has an underlying either cause or a strong contributor from a mental health issue. I literally was just listening to NPR yesterday and heard a story that, a patient who had chronic pain, and when they really dug into it, it turned out to be issues that, she had had as a child. And then when those issues were addressed, her pain went away. That's an anecdote, right? I'm not going to go on record and talk all about something that's a bit outside my skill set, but it certainly stands with all of the things that we see. And we see this as physicians as well. Any primary care doctor would absolutely agree that that the linkage between mental and physical health is a strong one. And I think that training has trickled down into medical schools. So that's now a strong part of the curriculum for all physicians, in their medical school training.
No, I think that's a very valid point. And it's, especially when you're talking about the role of the primary care physician, my wife is a PCP, and I hear about a lot of the stuff that she ends up having to address, which is really not what you'd expect would be occurring with your PCP. But as you said, that's kind of the front line and the one where arguably the patient might have the most interaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And congrats to being married to a primary care doctor.
It definitely provides a unique insight into the challenges and also the benefits of it, because I think while it's easy to focus on and talk about the negative aspects, the other piece of it is if there wasn't true value that can be provided and derived, I don't imagine many people would want to be sticking into that role.
Yeah, primary care physicians, I guess I could ask you a question. Does your wife enjoy being a primary care doctor?
I would say most of the time. As I said, I think it's easy when you've had a frustrating encounter or a problem from the system arise to have that kind of disrupt your day. But as I said, I think it's, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's being a physician or anything in your life, you tend to talk about the negative things because it's, that allows some venting. But it is helpful to then remind yourself of the positives, which are usually the majority.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know, and I'm not, I think physicians who have critical things to say need to be heard. I think physicians that are practicing out there, I do not practice full time. So I'm not going to say that I'm never going to go on record and tell other physicians about what their practice environment is like and specifically. But I do think that if you really get to the core of it, most physicians will admit and happily admit that when they can be a doctor, where they can really help somebody through a trying time or solve a particular medical issue, that it's tremendously satisfying. And, we all have obstructions in our day, and I'm working tirelessly in my career to try to help physicians bridge some of those issues. But it still is a pretty, a pretty cool way to make a living, so to speak.
Yes. No. And actually, I kind of want to turn back to one piece of what we were talking about in terms of the importance and that delivery of mental health. It's, I think we were kind of talking, you were discussing a lot the amount of it that the primary care might render. But are you seeing that there's actual integration where there are mental health clinicians co-locating or co-providing services alongside?
Absolutely. And I think that's a phenomenal, that's a great improvement to bring, the folks who are specialized psychologists and psychiatrists, closer to that point zero provision of care. At the VA, we were one of the early places. This was 20 years ago, where they brought a psychiatrist into the clinic on certain days, so that we could immediately be able to bounce off ideas around them, or maybe start somebody on a medication that we weren't as familiar with. A lot of those medications have significant side effects, and you have to be very careful and thoughtful about how you apply them. And having that expertise at your fingertips was tremendous. You didn't have to just refer somebody and then wonder what happens to them. Patients get better care. And I think it's more satisfying as well for the mental health providers too, because sometimes they see patients and the patients come in with physical ailments and they're not as comfortable with those. So it's absolutely a great improvement. So we've seen it at the VA. I know that other health systems are doing that as well. Most of the integrated health systems have some form or fashion of that.
So do you have a sense or an opinion in terms of how allowing that easy back and forth and the coordination of services impacts the patient trust?
So my anecdotal evidence from many, many patients is that it's a huge improvement. That when patients can get an answer at the same clinic visit, or I can do something that I would otherwise feel pretty uncomfortable, or I'd have to say, you know, you can leave the appointment's open, you know, end of the appointment, I'll call you and tell you what I hear, rather than just saying, hey, I just spoke to so-and-so and I'm able to do the following things. And it's better for patients. We've all been a patient. That's one of the unique things about being a doctor. And nobody wants to wait for that phone call. Everyone wants to get the answer as quickly as they can. That period of that time where you're waiting for the answer is can be very, very nerve-wracking. So patients benefit tremendously.
So, and given that kind of more immediate benefit that you're talking about, does that help encourage the patients to raise and discuss the mental health issues that they might be experiencing?
I think it does. I think because if as a primary care physician, if you feel more confident that you have expertise that's closer to you, so to speak, you're going to be more willing and able to and receptive to those questions. I think it's probably an inherent bias among people. And again, no data to support this, just my own personal experience that you tend to, you know, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so I think it can be very helpful.
So, and just kind of building off of that, you know, do you see more acceptance, or I don't know if acceptance is the right word, but maybe a more willingness to raise mental health issues and maybe more of a recognition within both the industry and maybe society as a whole of the importance of able to discuss a mental health issue?
Absolutely. I think the idea that we're destigmatizing mental health is hugely important and a tremendous improvement. We still have a long way to go. But in my personal experience, mental health has become more okay to talk about, if you will. And I think everybody benefits from that.
What do you feel has been the impetus for that change?
I'll be candid. I'm not 100% sure. I think that I think there's just a general attention to it. I think we understand. We certainly understand. That it's a huge importance. There's people who've been dedicating research to it, so it's brought it to the forefront. You know, we now know that, you know, 1 in 100 people in America live with schizophrenia, and you know, 16 million American adults have depression. And when you start hearing that data and that news gets brought to the forefront, it just starts a conversation. So I think that more than any, that is just one reason. But to say that I can't point to any one single reason as to why that's something that is, you know, more okay. And again, like I said, we still have a long way to go.
No, that's definitely fair enough to not be able to point to any single reason or even begin to describe probably what's a whole multitude. But kind of just as you said, that there's still a long way to go. What do you see as some of the next steps in terms of helping to cement and continue to progress?
I think it's just a continued recognition, and I think physicians need to, you know, be attentive to their patients and you know, try to elicit some of these things. That's difficult to do in the course of a 10-minute appointment, but I think it's something we need to strive for. And I do also think, you know, continued improvements and training of new mental health professionals is also something that will help a lot as well.
Yeah, no, it seems like the training of appropriate professionals and just providing the opportunities is really a key for the continued evolution and improvement of care in all regards.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So believe it or not, we are already starting to get very close to the end of our time. So kind of what I'd like to do is just hopefully give it a very broad final question to kind of wrap together what we've been talking about. You know, given what we're discussing in terms of, you know, the role of primary care and kind of the evolution there, and also the growing integration and destigmatization of mental health, what changes would you like to do or would you like to implement to further the delivery of care to an individual as a whole person?
You know, I think that's obviously an intentionally broad question. I think, which is cool. Yeah, no, I think that efforts that we can make to get patients to be more, you know, have their own doctor or someone that they identify as their provider. And I think I keep saying physician, but obviously a huge part of that solution are going to be nurse practitioners and other allied health professionals. That group of professionals is going to make a huge difference as we move forward. But really having enough professional healthcare professionals that every patient who wants one can feel that they have someone that they can call and who understands them as a person. Because you know, there's no substitute for just taking the time to get to know your patients. And there's obviously a million roadblocks in front of that. People move, there's cost considerations, obviously. Providers move, et cetera. There's new care models and the like. But at its core, it's having a person who knows who you are. And I think the responsibility is sort of equal on both sides. I think the physicians need to hold fast as best they can about ensuring that they have time to learn and understand and get to know their patients, which I know they all want to do. And then at the same time, patients need to, you know, take the time to get to know a provider and find a provider so that they have the right physician or nurse practitioner who gets to know them. Because you never know when you're going to get sick and you never know when you're going to need them. I like to say to people as a physician, I'm a service that I hope you never need, but you probably will need me at some point.
No, I think that was a very insightful and thoughtful perspective. But it kind of, as I said, believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Peter Alperin, for a great conversation today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity, and it was a very enjoyable conversation.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.